Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Good morning. It's so good to see all of you today. It's a packed house today. And I am praying for healing in the house today. You can clap for that. My name is April. For those of you who don't know me, I'm April Colquitt. I'm our Wellspring Kids pastor, and I also serve in our communications team. And if you were not here last week, or if this is your very first time joining us, or maybe your first time joining us for a while, I want to just let you know right off the top that this series we're calling Aftermath is a series about grief and a series about loss. And when I say grief, I'm not just talking about the death of a loved one or loss of life. That is usually the very first thing that we think about when we think of the word grief. But grief can refer to many different types of loss in our life, whether it's the loss of a job or the end of a relationship or a marriage. It could be grieving the loss of independence through age or disability. There's grieving when we feel like we've been abandoned or betrayed. Many people grieve the loss of infertility and miscarriage. It can be so many different things. So we're not just talking about loss of life here. Grief is this, the feelings of disappointment or pain that stem from something that no longer exists. And I believe that this is a very important topic for us. I know it's kind of a heavy topic. It's a little bit different than what we normally talk about here at Wellspring, but I think this is such an important topic for us to dive into together. You know, for the last year and a half, we have been walking through something together as a community, as a country, as a world. We've been in the middle of a global pandemic, and COVID alone has left an aftermath of loss in its wake. And then there are a multitude of different disappointments and painful experiences that have been completely unrelated to COVID. And so we see that as a church, and we see the pain and the heartbreak that's happened in our community, and it breaks our heart. And we also know that our culture doesn't do a very good job of responding to grief. When something painful or difficult has happened, the message that we often hear is, stay strong, be positive, get back out there, you've got this, you're gonna be okay. I think for some of us as who are Christians, those of us who call ourselves Christ followers, the message that is maybe unspoken but expected is that our pain should hurt less than other people's, and that if we are showing signs of sadness, then it must mean that our faith is weak. And what we learned last week is none of those messages reflect the heart of Jesus. According to Jesus, there is a better way for us to approach grief. And so that's what we began talking about in Aftermath week one. If you didn't get a chance to hear last week's message, I want to encourage you to go listen to it. You can download the app and listen to week one there. You can find it on our website. But this is one of those series that will be the most helpful to you when you hear each and every week. And last week, what we talked about was Jesus' heart for us when we are grieving. We actually talked about how it's not just okay for us to grieve, but it's actually good for us to grieve. And that sounds odd to say, but even Jesus tells us that it's good to grieve. As we started last week, we looked at Jesus' most famous teaching, the Sermon on the Mount, and we looked at what he says about when we are sad and when we're mourning. This is what Jesus says. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. The word blessed in this context refers to a declaration of what is good. Now, that does not mean that we should be happy to be sad. What Jesus is telling us is that the blessing is that we're not alone, but that we're comforted when we're in pain. The blessing is that we have the promise of Jesus's presence, even in our pain. That when we're hurting, he hurts with us. He grieves with us. He cries with us. And in no way does Jesus tell us to shake off our pain and get over it. He does not rush us. He sits with us in our pain. You know, one thing that we know is that there will be loss in this life. God doesn't like it and he doesn't cause it, but he does make it pretty clear in his word that we can expect it to happen. In the very beginning, when God created the world, everything that he made was good and perfect. Everything that he made was good. But when Adam and Eve fell to temptation in the Garden of Eden, sin entered the world, and it began to infect all of the goodness and all of the perfection that God had given us. And so while there are still good things in our world, the world is no longer a perfect reflection of God's goodness. It is now broken, and we see that evidenced every day through things like crime and relationship breakdowns and abuse and natural disasters and racism. All of those things are the result and the cause of sin. God does not cause those things, and it breaks his heart. Sin absolutely breaks God's heart. But in no way has it affected the goodness and the perfection of who God is. What sin does mean for us is that we will not know a pain-free life this side of heaven. But God in his goodness has promised us that he will restore everything to perfection again one day. And we have that hope as an anchor for our souls. It's what we sang about this morning. We have that as a hope. But in the meantime, we are living in this temporary world, in this temporary body, and we will know pain. We see that pattern throughout the whole story of the Bible from beginning to end. The writers of the New Testament write about it, and even Jesus himself tells us that we will know trouble in this world. When he is teaching his disciples in the Gospel of John and many other places, but in the Gospel of John, he's teaching his disciples about some of the things that they can expect to happen, some of the things that will happen surrounding his death and his resurrection and beyond that. And he tells them, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart, I've overcome the world. This is sort of like a good news sandwich, you know? We know what a compliment sandwich is. This is like a good news sandwich. And Jesus gives us this good news sandwich. He tells us, I have peace. In me, there will be peace. Peace is possible when you are connected to me. But then he tells us the bad news is that there's going to be trouble in this world. Expect that. And then he tells us the good news is I've overcome it. I have overcome all of the bad already. I have the victory. So I can't help but wonder why Jesus tells us the middle of the sandwich. Why does he tell us that there will be trouble? Can I tell you what I think? I think A, he wants us to be anchored to him, to build our foundation in him, because that is where we will find peace. And he wants us to know that when we are in the pain, when we are in the fire, as we just sang about, he's already had the victory. He's already claimed the victory in that, and we can have hope in that and confidence in that. But I also think maybe Jesus tells us that there will be trouble so that we will be prepared. In his loving, kind, good heart, he does not want us to be blindsided when something bad happens and when we feel disappointed. Last week we talked about how uncomfortable and unnatural it feels when we are grieving. And I wonder if one of the reasons that it feels so unnatural when we experience a loss and when we're grieving is because we're just not prepared. When something bad happens or when we are disappointed, when we experience a loss, we just don't know what to do. We don't know what to do for ourselves, and we don't know what to do for other people. But what if there were some things that we could do knowing that there would be trouble? What if there were some things that we could do to prepare for the trouble? I believe that we can actually prevent some of the pain in the future by preparing in the present. God has kindly let us know that we can expect trouble. And I believe that we should not waste that warning, but that we should walk in wisdom, knowing that there will be trouble. Think about preparing for the aftermath of grief like we prepare for a hurricane. You know, we live in the South, we live on the East Coast, and every year hurricane season rolls around. And what do? We start watching the weather. We pay attention to the patterns that are happening out in the ocean. We listen a little bit more carefully. Some of us start gathering our hurricane supplies. You might go to Costco or to Sam's ahead of everybody else and get your stock of toilet paper and water so that you have it on the ready. You might even pay attention and listen for whether or not you might need to evacuate. Maybe the hardest part of preparing for a hurricane is deciding how we can prepare for the aftermath, because we really never know how bad it's going to be. Should we board up our windows? Should we not? Should we leave? Should we stay? We don't really know, but in the end, hopefully, you do something to prepare for the aftermath of that storm so that it's a little bit easier on the back end after the storm has already come through. What I am proposing today is that we prepare for the aftermath of a grief storm like we would prepare for the aftermath of a hurricane. That we take some steps ahead of time to educate ourselves, to be prepared so that when that storm comes, we're not totally knocked off our feet. We're not totally blindsided. I have done a lot of research for this series. I have read books and I've talked to people. I've listened to podcasts. I've met with counselors and therapists. And I've learned a lot of things about the way that we respond to loss, about our approach to grief. And I will tell you that one of the things I've learned is the bottom line is that grief is just awkward. It's very awkward. And there are a lot of awkward things that we live through in our lifetime. Like, I was thinking about it. A first kiss is really awkward, isn't it? A first date or a first kiss is really awkward. Maybe when you go to your very first job interview ever, that's awkward because you don't know what to wear, you don't know what kind of questions they're going to ask, you don't know what to do with your hands. It's awkward. You've probably been to some doctor's appointments that are very up close and very personal, and that's awkward. But grief is awkward on just a whole different level. It's awkward because it's hard to think about something bad happening to ourselves or to someone else. And it can create painful memories and experiences when we have to think about it. And so oftentimes what we do is we avoid thinking about it at all. And when we avoid thinking about it, we avoid learning about it and preparing for it. Many of us will wait until the grief storm has already arrived to start thinking about how we're going to survive it. But when we know that trouble is coming, I think that we can take some steps in the present now to prevent some of the pain. And you're going to hear me say some things today that might sound a little bit jarring to hear in church. It might feel a little bit awkward, but I want you to lean in, because I believe that if you will lean in, there is something in this message today for every single person in the room. Every single person in the room, if we will lean in and step into that awkwardness a little bit together. And remember, the reason that we are having this conversation today is because we can prevent some pain in the future by preparing in the present. Does it mean that we can prevent the storm from arriving altogether? No. Does it mean that we can prevent all the pain from happening? Absolutely not. But if we will take some steps to prepare for the aftermath of the storm, I believe that we can prevent some of the pain, that we can lighten our burden a little bit. So let's talk about some things that we can do to prevent some of the pain, to prepare for the aftermath of that grief storm when it arrives. The first thing that I think we can all do is plan for endings. Plan for endings. I mean, I know you're thinking, April, that sounds really cynical. But Jesus said, this world will bring you trouble. This world will bring you trouble. And so planning for endings is one thing that we can do. You know, everybody has heard it said, all good things must come to an end. And there's a lot of truth to that. Some endings we plan for on purpose, like retirement or graduation or getting our kids out of the house. We plan for those on purpose. But there are some endings that are unexpected that we don't ever see coming, like job loss or a serious diagnosis or the loss of a loved one. And so what if we could do some things now to plan for those endings when they come, when we are least expecting it? I'm talking about adulting, hardcore adulting. I'm talking about things like having an emergency savings account on the ready so that when the crisis comes, you have some of those basic needs met so that you can tend to the emotional needs of yourself and your family. Most financial advisors would recommend that we have somewhere around 1 to 2 months set aside to meet our basic needs in a crisis or in a tragedy or when we're disappointed. It will take a little bit of work. It will take a little bit of discipline to accumulate it and then protect it, but that's doable. And when we have it, it gives us peace of mind knowing that it's there so that then we're able to tend to our emotional needs, so that we're able to grieve, so that we're able to take time to recover. It also means doing things like making a will, having life insurance policy. I know that sounds really strange to talk about in church, but think about this. We all plan for life to enter the world. When we are expecting new life to come into the world, when we're expecting to bring a baby into our home, we plan and we prepare and we read books and we go to classes and we learn as much as we can to be as prepared as we can to bring that new life into our home. But we don't plan the same way for life to exit the world. I have talked to so many people. Not one counselor or person that I talked to said, just try not to think about that until you absolutely have to. Not one person said that. They all said, start now making a plan for the end of your life. You know why? Because it's one of the most loving things that we can do for our family. Many of the people that I talked to have seen the aftermath that comes when we don't plan for the ending. And some of you are nodding along right now because you have experienced it and you know how hard it is to have to come behind the loss of someone's life and clean up and pick up the pieces and try to figure out what to do. It's really hard. And it can sometimes, in some cases, create even more pain and more loss as families are left to figure that stuff out, and it can cause tension and even division. So one of the most loving things that we can do for our family is to prepare for that ahead of time. A couple of years ago, Eric's parents sat us down as a family, and they started having this conversation with us about what they wanted to happen when they pass on, and we were like, stop! This is awful. Why are we talking about this? It is Thanksgiving, for crying out loud. But hindsight, I know they were doing the most loving thing that they could do as mature parents. Now, please hear me, parents. I am not telling you to go home and start talking to your young children today about what you want to happen when you're gone. I am just simply challenging all of us to step into the awkwardness and put action to good intentions. Because sometimes we have thoughts and we have good intentions about what we want to happen, but we haven't taken any steps to actually make that plan. Step into the awkwardness by making a plan for those endings, and we can prevent some of the pain. Something else that I think we can do to prepare for the aftermath of grief is to know some common side effects. And this applies to any and all forms of life or of loss, not just the loss of life, but any kind of traumatic event or tragedy or crisis. When those things happen, when there are big stressors like that in our life, there are some common things that happen to our bodies in those moments. And if we know what some of those are ahead of time, then we could recognize them when they happen. It can help us to manage them in the moment. So I want to start by just trying to give you a very simple explanation of what happens to your brain and to your body in a high-stress situation, in a tragedy, or in a traumatic event. You have a part of your brain called the amygdala. You've probably heard that word before. It's a little small almond-shaped cluster in the middle of your brain. And the amygdala is part of your limbic system. And that involves things like memory, clarity, emotions, sleep, and appetite. These are basically all of the things that help us to function as humans, right? all of these things sort of make us function like human beings rather than some other living being. And during a stressful event, your amygdala swells, and it triggers all of these other functions of your body. So the best way that I can explain this is to show you a visual, okay? Just bear with me a minute. This is a gong, and let's just pretend that your amygdala is a gong, okay? When something stressful happens, do you hear the reverberations of that? When something stressful happens, it's like your amygdala swells and the reverberations carry throughout all of these parts and functions of your body. So let's just say, for example, that a bear walks into your living room, okay? Probably not all that uncommon or far-fetched these days from just some videos that I've seen around the Grand Strand. It's crazy. So let's just say you walk in and find a bear standing in your living room. In that moment, your amygdala swells, and it triggers your fight, flight, or freeze syndrome. And so that causes all of these other functions to shut down so that your body can make split-second decisions about how to survive in that moment. When the bear's gone out of your living room and you have survived that encounter, your amygdala goes back to size, and over time, your body will go back to its normal function. But when you are in a prolonged state of stress, like you're grieving, you've lost your job, you're walking through the end of your marriage, you're taking care of a loved one who's been diagnosed with an illness, when you are in a prolonged state of stress like that, it is like your amygdala is being hit over and over and over. And those reverberations of your amygdala affecting all of these functions will continue to vibrate throughout all of your body until you do something to stop it. That's why external stressors affect you over time, causing things like anxiety and depression and changes in appetite and moodiness and affect your immune system, brain fog. All of those things, it's because your gong has been hit. And until you do something to stop the vibrating of the gong, it will continue to upset and offset all of those bodily functions that help you feel like a human. Do you know when people are grieving, they often report feeling like a crazy person? That's because the gong has been hit and nothing has been done to stop the ringing of the gong. And so isn't that helpful to know ahead of the grief storm? Because now, when you find yourself in that storm and those things are happening and you feel crazy, you'll go, oh, they told me this would happen. Somebody has hit the gong and I've got to do something to stop it. Which begs the question, how do we make it stop, right? That's what you're all thinking. What do we do to make it stop? And that part's not quite as simple. It takes some work and it takes some intention. Grief is work. Grief is work. But the first thing that we must do is slow down. We have to slow down. Because when you are suffering, slow becomes necessary. You have to have time to breathe. You have to have time to process and feel your emotions. You have to have time to reset and reboot your systems. We talked last week about the benefits of crying or the benefits of physical activity and how those can help stimulate those chemicals in our body to reset our system. And I know that for some of us, slowing down and taking care of ourselves feels like we're being selfish, but it's not. Oftentimes, it is one of the most loving things that we can do for our family and for people around us so that we can continue to be responsible human beings who take care of other people under our care. We have to slow down when we are suffering. And when something bad happens, you can't quit life, but you can quit some things. It might mean getting off of social media for a while so that you're not surrounded with the negativity and the comparison that happens on social media. That's basically what it is. Y'all know that, right? You can quit some activities. You can say no to some things for a while. Slowing down looks like protecting your downtime like it is sacred, because it is, so that you can begin to recover. Slowing down might mean that you quit watching TV for a little bit, or you turn it off sometimes. Just turn on some worship music. Do you see how healing it was for us to listen to that music this morning? That's soothing to our soul. And we need to be able to fill our life with those kinds of things. Slowing down is necessary. Sometimes it means that we need to quit listening to some voices and influences that we've allowed into our life and be intentional about seeking wise counsel. Seek wise counsel. It might be from a trusted friend. It might be a medical professional. It might be a counselor or a therapist. Sometimes we need that. In the book of Proverbs, which is written by Solomon, Solomon was the son of King David, and he was given a great deal of wisdom by God. And some of his wise words are recorded for us in the book of Proverbs. And he says this about wise words. He says, wise words satisfy like a good meal. The right words bring satisfaction. Wise words satisfy our soul. You know how you feel when you finally get to eat your favorite meal, especially when you've been craving it for a long time? For me, that's usually sushi. When I finally get to eat sushi, it's like, yes, so good. Solomon says that wise words are soothing and satisfying to our soul. That's why sometimes when you've been here on Sunday mornings or you've watched a message online, you feel satisfied, you feel full, because you have heard the wise words of God's word. And that is satisfying to us. Perhaps the first place we should all go when we are suffering is to seek wisdom and wise words from God's word, because it offers us hope and peace. It is satisfying to us. But sometimes we need a little bit more. We need something in addition to the wise words of the Bible. We need to talk to a trusted friend. We need to talk to a counselor or a therapist. I asked one counselor how we can know if we need therapy. How do I know if I need to go to a counselor when I'm grieving? And she said, the general rule of thumb is that if you are having dangerous thoughts about yourself or someone else, or if your grieving has impaired your ability to function in everyday life, to do everyday tasks, then it's time to get some help. But you know what she also told me? She said she recommends that every person who's experienced a loss go for a grief checkup, just like you would go for a checkup from your doctor if you had a sore throat. You need to go find out, is it just allergies or do I have strep? Do I need an antibiotic? Do I not? She said, go for a grief checkup just to find out how you're doing. You might be doing okay, but you might need a little bit of help. If you do, accept the help. There is no shame in talking about your pain so that you can begin to recover and get better. We need to seek wise counsel when we have been suffering and when we have been hurting and experienced a loss. There's one other thing that we can do to prepare for the aftermath of grief. But before I share it with you, I'm gonna actually invite someone to join me this morning on our stage. I've said many times, and you're gonna keep hearing me say it, that I have resourced a lot of people for this because I'm not the expert. And as I've sat down and talked with people, they've shared some really valuable things with me. And one of the people that I had the opportunity to sit down with a few weeks ago is my friend Christine. Christine actually lost her mom when she was in college. And then just last summer, she lost her dad to cancer. And so I wanted her to share some of her experiences with me. Would you guys help me welcome Christine? Christine injured her foot because she's a runner. I don't know how people run.
So I'm grieving the loss of the use of my foot. Right. I feel like it tied right in. So, I did it on purpose, April. I just wanted to be able to give you a prime example.
That's right. So she's moving a little bit slow, but thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And as I said, Christine had some valuable things to share, and I wanted her just to get to tell you herself. Sometimes it's better to hear it from somebody else. And so when you and I sat down, one of the things that you talked to me about was the difference in your experience of losing your mom mm-hmm. versus losing your dad. Can you talk a little bit about that and what the difference was?
So not only was my age different, I was 19 when I lost my mom, and I was 39 when I lost my dad, but there was a difference in where I was in my faith, mm-hmm. in my walk and my journey. At 19, I had a religion. I did not have a relationship with God. Mm-hmm. I also didn't have the right people in my life. I had some good people. They all went away to college. Nice of them to do that. Where this time around, I had a firm foundation in my church, in my community group, in where I was serving, in the faith-filled people that I work out with. Just in general, everyone that was around me had some sort of love for Christ, and they were able to pour into me differently than the group I was with back then. And this time I had knowledge and experience, and I knew what those side effects were going to be. I prepared ahead of time. I made sure that things were ready.
Yeah. So what Christine is talking about, I feel like, is one, the value of having a faith foundation, you know, of knowing. It's what we talked about with the verse that I shared in the beginning about, you know, knowing that Jesus already has the victory. Mm-hmm. When we have a strong foundation of faith, we have that foundation, that hope to cling to, that relationship is there. So you experience that, but also the other way that we prepare for grief that Christine is really talking about is to be in community, right? And tell me a little bit about the value of, because you guys don't just attend here.
No, we're not back row sitters. We're we're up front. We're present. We're present here on Sundays. My son and I serve as door greeters. I've served in the children's side. I serve on Wednesdays as a tribe leader. You know, we are here and we're invested.
You're invested here.
And that makes a big difference. I knew as soon as I found out about my father on June 10th, I wrote an email on June 11th, and it was to my church. And it was my church that I said, I need prayer. I need prayer. I don't even know what I need right now because I didn't know what I needed. I was just kind of overwhelmed with information. But I knew I needed a group that was praying for me and with me and that was going to walk through it.
Yeah. And I think that's really important. You know, I feel like our church hears us say a lot, be invested, be in a group, be here, engage with us. And that's not for our benefit. That is for your benefit. So that when a storm comes, so that when you experience loss, you have the benefit of what you experienced, Christine, with you knew exactly who to reach out to when it happened.
Yes.
And there's a lot of value in that. You also talked to me a little bit about you mentioned it just now, about your workout group. You know, it's not just being in a faith community in church, but we can have those everywhere, right?
Everywhere. It was we always laugh because when I would run, we would go, and some mornings I'd be like, I just need to walk. That was okay. And some mornings we would run, and she'd go, oh, this is an angry run. I'm like, I'm a mad run, yes. And that was okay. And at the end, she would check in on me later and go, so that was fun this morning. How you doing? And I had those types of people, and even from my church and the community groups, just having people check in, I think is the best way that people can really kind of help during all of it.
Yeah, and then the other thing that you said this just this morning about there were times when you didn't want to show up. And I feel like we do that, right? When something bad happens, that even when we have that community, there is a tendency for us to shut down and isolate.
And that's okay as long as you don't stay in that bubble forever. You've got to come out of it. And having people who surround you and check in with you and just make sure that you're doing okay, I think is one of the best things. And, you know, what I've learned through it also is that how I handle my grief also portrays onto my kids and how they handle the grief and how we talk about it. And you and I hadn't really thought about it, but the more, as we're going into Kids Celebrate tonight and we talked about preparing and sitting down with our kids, you know, my mom passing away before my dad, my youngest, she doesn't think anything, Jesus is where you want to be. So death is just a natural conversation in our house. Loss is a natural conversation. And I think that that helped them. Gosh, I hope it helped them. But yeah. I think in general, you know, that helps as well, just talking about it.
Well, what you're describing now is not just having the foundation of faith for yourself.
Mm-hmm. But
for
surrounding your kids with the right people as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I do remember you telling me this earlier when we talked about how even Rayanne was like, well, yeah, he's in heaven. Mm-hmm. Like, her having that peace of mind because mm-hmm. of the foundation that you guys have set in your mm-hmm. home.
Yes.
Super valuable.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add?
No. Grief is awkward. And just let the process happen, and no one will go through it the same.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. And this is kind of, you know, in a few weeks, we're starting a grief group where it will be like this, to just be able to sit and talk about our experiences, learn from each other. And so thank you for modeling that today and
thank
for
you.
Just modeling how we seek wise counsel and be in community. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You guys help me thank Christine. The biggest thing that I want to leave you with today is just that, it's what Christine just said, that grief is awkward. It is awkward, and sometimes it's hard to know how to approach it. But I am convinced that if we will accept the challenge to step into the awkwardness, if we will just go there, that we can prevent some of the pain in the future by preparing in the present. Jesus tells us, in this world, you will have trouble. Let's not waste that warning. Let's be wise with that warning. And what we're talking about today, making a plan for endings, knowing some of the side effects, being in community, I want to be very clear that that is not living in fear of the future. It's not. That is walking in wisdom towards the future. That is walking in wisdom with what we know to be true, while also anchoring our faith and anchoring our beliefs in Jesus Christ, who we know already has the victory. And when you are in that community, when you seek wise counsel, those are the people who will remind you, hey, slow down, accept some help, listen to wise counsel. You cannot do it alone. Jesus doesn't expect you to do it alone. He has created our bodies to respond to grief through systems and processes within our body, but he did not design us to do that alone. He wants us to do it together in community. And next week, that's what we're going to talk about more. We're going to talk about how we can be that community for people who are hurting and when they've experienced a loss. But for today, if you are the one who is grieving, if the grief storm has hit your home, slow down. Give yourself permission to stop for a little bit, to quit some things so that you can begin to recover from the aftermath of that loss. Give yourself permission to seek wise counsel, to turn off some of the noise so that you can be satisfied and full by the wisdom that comes from other people. I hope that you will join us next week. And you'll continue to keep learning with us about this. This is so valuable. When we step into the awkwardness of grief, I truly believe that it will help us to prepare for some of the pain in the future so that we're better equipped to survive our own storm and help other people in theirs. Let's pray together. Father God, you are so good to us. We know that. We cannot avoid all loss, God. We cannot avoid all storms. We cannot avoid all pain. Thank you that you are kind enough to warn us that we will experience it in this life. And God, I do thank you that we have the promise of better to come, that we will see better days, that you are preparing a place for us that is perfect and free of pain. And in the meantime, God, I pray that we would walk in wisdom, that we would prepare for what is to come by doing some of these things to avoid some of the pain. And that if nothing else, God, we would know we are anchored in you, that peace is possible through Jesus. Thank you for the gift of your Son. Thank you for the promises of your word. I pray that we would find hope, that we would find peace in you each and every day through the good and the bad. Jesus, you are our hope. It is in your name that we pray. Amen.